Well, good day and welcome to another episode here of the Disaster Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and got a good show for you tonight, including a very special retrospective about a dear friend of some members of the crew here, and we'll talk about that here in just a second. Before we get to that, though, got to bring in my co-host, Sam Bradley. Sam, how you doing?
Pretty good. It's been a very weird, sad week, which we will talk about. But on the weather front, at least it's warming up. We seem to go from blizzard to rain to warmth and then start the cycle all over again. So, Miss Becky, is that cycle going to continue or is Colorado actually going to find spring?
Yeah, it's been certainly an interesting spring for y'all out there. You know, it looks pretty, it's like it's going to sort of normal out across the U.S. The East has been fairly cold, but I think we'll sort of send things back to normal and kick some storms off across the plains again. Unfortunately, they could see severe weather into this weekend, and the East Coast turning pretty seasonable after a fairly chilly week, even some snow in some parts earlier in the week in the interior Northeast. So, you know, I think maybe we'll eventually sort of get back to what May is supposed to be like across the country.
Yeah, snow in May, come on now. You know, that was last week. Are you kidding me? And I had just planted my garden, of course, so I had to go out there and cover it up. It's like, you can't win.
Yep.
You can't fight Colorado weather. That's the thing. Anything else going on? I hear there's a lot of discussion about hurricane season and all of that.
There was a tropical, I was on vacation when this happened, but I briefly saw it. Something in the Pacific Ocean. I don't think it's there anymore, but something spun off west of Mexico there. I don't think it's there anymore, but you know, we're getting into that season. It's already the middle of May, so now is certainly the time to be thinking about hurricane planning, because we're only a few weeks away from the start, and as previous years have indicated, the start of the season doesn't really matter, as we can easily have storms prior to that June 1st date.
Yeah, we'll have to have a deeper discussion on that. Wasn't there not a tornado in New Orleans? Did I see that correctly?
Yeah, there was. I believe that was 2 days ago on the 11th. It was the only tornado reported the entire day. There's a handful of other wind reports and hail reports from Texas along the Gulf Coast, even into the southeast a little bit. The uptown area of New Orleans had a track length of 5.25 miles, a path width of 125 yards, and an estimated peak wind of 85 miles per hour. From what I understand, it was pretty much downtown New Orleans. There were images of a debris ball on radar. So certainly did a little bit of damage, unfortunately. Pretty fairly unusual for that.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. They get their hurricanes down there. Poor
right.
New Orleans.
Yeah.
Have to check with our friend BJ down there and see how he's doing. So Dr. Joe, how are things in Memphis? Warming up?
Yeah, we've had a little bit of dicey weather. We actually had a tornadic event. I don't know that it actually has been considered a tornado just north of us. Did a little bit of damage to power lines and, you know, trees and things like that, but nothing terribly significant. But other than that, it's a typical spring in the southeast.
I did see that there's a major crack in a bridge, the I-40 bridge down there, that's causing all sorts of issues.
Yeah, so that was discovered a couple of days ago on a routine inspection, and actually one of the a crack is a little bit of a understatement. One of the 900 foot, I hope I'm saying that right. Some significant beam.
You're one of the box girders, right?
Major, exactly. Part of the major span across the river has completely broken in half, and was picked up on this routine inspection. So that bridge has been closed completely, both to interstate traffic as well as river traffic that runs underneath it. And, you know, a plan is aggressively being looked at to try to get that bridge back online, because it is a massive artery for transportation of goods between the east and west, as well as obviously the Mississippi River being shut down. So the economic impacts of that are consistent, I'm sure, with the Suez Canal being blocked up for 5 days. You know, it's going to be the same kind of deal. So they are aggressively working toward trying to get this thing back online as quick as they can. But it, you know, I don't think anybody knows how long it's going to be yet. Certainly sounds like it'll at least be weeks, but could be months before this thing's back online.
The good news is, though, that they discovered it, because I can only imagine what kind of incident that would have turned into had the bridge collapsed under traffic. I can't even imagine.
Absolutely. A monstrous event had that occurred. But you know, part of the concern is, are there other areas of this bridge that have cracks in it? And, you know, is it going to end up taking a major renovation effort to get this thing back online? I think they just don't have any idea how big a job this may be yet.
Well, good that they go in and check those things, even when they don't perceive there's a problem. But boy, you're right, Joe.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's been a huge deal for us, because our colleagues in West Memphis, just on the other side of the river, depend on Memphis for their medical care. And so EMS now has, you know, significant obstructions to rapid transport, and we're trying to put in air transport capabilities, beef those up quite a bit so that we can move patients by air if we need to, and all that sort of stuff. So just a lot of impacts from the closure of that bridge, and we're just beginning to feel those.
Oh yeah, in so many directions. That's scary. Well, we're going to talk about a loss today, Jim. And in fact, Joe and Jamie and I would not be doing this podcast if it weren't for this man. He was a good friend of ours, as well as having been a good friend of thousands of people in EMS. And, you know, we could easily spend hours talking about him, but that would be kind of hard. It's kind of hard anyway. His name was Thaddeus Setla. He was a paramedic in Alameda County, California. He was known as a videographer, and some of the projects he did were just mind-blowing. And we'll talk about some of those a little bit. But Joe, first I want you to talk about how you met Ted, and it was because of Ted, already knowing Jamie and myself, that we started this discussion about the podcast.
Yeah, you're right. We had an opportunity to connect with Ted when we were doing a lot of the Paragon-based educational labs and all that sort of stuff, and he was part of that and worked with us, did a lot of videography around several of those when we did some national conferences and all that sort of stuff. And of course, that ended up connecting us with you guys in many different ways as all that stuff was happening. And so it was a tragic and shocking loss in many ways. It's particularly frustrating to me that somebody like Ted, who was so active in this space, ends up succumbing to a sudden out-of-hospital cardiac arrest, which is one of the things that we're all passionate about trying to make a difference in. And, it just shows you that we've still got a long way to go to really make a big impact on that disease process and the implications of, trying to catch those folks earlier and do a better job with resuscitation, et cetera.
Well, Jamie and I were talking about that before the show, and the irony of the fact that he did so much work on sudden cardiac arrest, and then he becomes a victim of one. Jamie, you met him in like 2009, right?
Yeah, actually, I met him. I think I'd been doing the medic cast since 2005, and then we, Chris Montera, who did one of the EMS podcasts. He put together a group of us podcasters in the space We got invited to come to EMS World Expo in Atlanta in 2009. Basically, they said, we'll give you some booth space if you guys want to do some podcasting from our event. And I raided my church's sound system, portable sound system, to take down there. So we had speakers and a mixer and stuff. Ted came with all of his camera stuff to record the video aspects of it. And so everybody kind of brought something to the table. And that was when I first met Ted. And we talked a little bit about his Level Zero short documentary project he did about paramedics in Alameda County. And then he that kind of started it off, and I was really amazed at his passion for projects having to do with the EMS space in particular, but also moved into so many things like the Code STEMI series he did with Tom Boothele that focused on cardiac arrest survivors. And how the systems approach of, out of hospital cardiac arrest with early recognition, early CPR, getting the EMS crews on hand and working quickly to get them to the cath lab, that whole process could result in survivorship. And it was, I think some of those videos are instrumental in convincing people that this could work, this could happen. And, Joe, we've talked a lot on this show about how that aspect, that outlook has changed over the last, however many years we've been doing this show, that people really started to believe that survival of out of hospital cardiac arrest is a possibility.
Well, you're exactly right, Jamie, and Ted was a huge part of that, and I think how ironic it is that some of our most passionate supporters and educators around sudden cardiac arrest have actually succumbed to that disease. I think of Dr. Craig Manifold, as one of my dear friends and heroes who died of a sudden cardiac arrest in his home. And now Ted, both guys that were passionate about trying to make a difference in educating people and enlightening people and, showing the world how different it can be. And yet the irony of, that's part of that becomes part of their story in a very tragic way.
Ah, well said, Joe. Well, speaking of Level Zero, that's when I first met Ted, however many years ago that was. Just noodling around social media, I saw something about this movie, Level Zero. Well, I got to check that out. Alameda County is one of the busiest systems, I think, in the world. It was run by AMR at the time. I was a clinical coordinator who had just moved to the next door county, Contra Costa, and I saw this thing. Level Zero was something he put together about the people that work there. And, God love the fire department, but there's always stuff about the fire department, but very little about people that work their butts off in the private ambulance industry. And they're different people. They're, he picked out folks that were very different in a number of ways. I got a comment today from Ray Erickson. He was an older guy, different personal dynamics. Just showed them how they go about their lives and how they go about their jobs. And I mean, it wasn't hugely dramatic or anything. It wasn't like there was a huge storyline, but it touched on their stories, and I was so impressed with it. I think I shot him a happy face or something. It wasn't much of anything, but like he responded right away, and he goes, "Do you want to talk?" I went, "Oh, yeah, okay." And he got on the phone with me, and we must have talked for an hour, and he was telling me about all his projects. And I said, you're the kind of guy I want to be associated with. Whatever you're doing, I'd like to be involved in it. And that started years of doing just that. One thing I remember was he did another movie. There's a good friend of ours, Justin, who worked for San Francisco Fire, and he started a conversation with a paramedic in England. And the two of them are comparing notes. And then they decided, hey, we should film this. Let's bring Mark over to ride along with San Francisco Fire and see the differences in their systems. That was mind-boggling. Mark couldn't believe how the hoops we have to jump through in this country. And, you know, so that whole thing was filmed, and that really put those friendships together. So they decided they were going to have a premiere of that, Chronicles of EMS, and they were going to have it in San Francisco. And they sent out invitations to a bunch of people. This is like a 20-minute film. It's not like huge. So many people showed up from all over the country. People like A.J. Heitman. I remember standing next to him. He goes, this is pretty good, isn't it? Yeah. You know, just mind-boggling. Doctors of all kinds were there because they were that impressed with what he was doing. Well, that same time, we hatched an idea where Ted says, well, we got all of these people here. We got all of these heavy hitters. We need to do something while they're here. So we all agreed to go to Ted's house and outfit his garage like a studio and do a thing we called Seat at the Table, where we would have, you know, Mark, of course, since he was here in the country, and Justin and any number of other people, to have discussions about anything, everything and anything, and filmed it. And so that became an ongoing thing for a while. The Seat at the Table, and all those episodes are out there somewhere. He brought back my love of photography because I kind of lost it somewhere along the way. I'd help him with productions, of which there were many. He taught me how to use the big video cameras and use them. We went to the EMS shows like Jamie was talking about. There's also some things that people don't know that we did. We were talking about it earlier. There was a paramedic in Santa Clara County that went to a Dodgers Giants game, and unfortunately, somebody beat the crap out of him in the parking lot. He was badly head injured, and this had a huge impact on his coworkers. So Ted said, we got to do something. What can we do? And we decided to take two cameras, go down there, and interview all his coworkers and have them say something to him or tell a story. Or we didn't know if he was ever going to be well enough to hear that, but we decided that's what we wanted to do. And it was also helpful for those coworkers to be able to talk to him in that fashion. He's doing remarkably well, by the way, now. He even wanted me to do a show called Disaster Stam. I don't know that you even know about that, Jamie, but it never really came about. He went on, he did a lot of work for AMR, including, was it 2017 that when Joe and I were deployed, that he was out with AMR and sending us live streams of all of these storms as they were going through where he was. And then most recently, he decided to create a CBD tincture with the purpose of helping first responders with PTSD. And it actually worked well for a lot of people. There's just so many things that would take hours to talk about all of them.
Yeah. But, and I just like to tell people that, you know, you're listening to this show, it's because of Ted. You know, if you've enjoyed the Disaster Podcast, it really, we wouldn't have gotten together with Joe and Sam and I hooked up with Jim Logan and Joe and the rest of, you know, the whole Paragon group folks. None of that would have happened if Ted hadn't kind of brought it all together. So, you know, as you're thinking of this, I would just ask everybody to just keep a thought in the back of your mind for his wife, Gina, and his three kids, who, you know, are dealing with a loss right now. And we can talk about our loss, but, you know, they're feeling it way, way more than we are, obviously. And, so I think, you know, it's just something we wanted to just talk about here on the show at the beginning and just fill you all in a little bit about him.
And it was that dinner we had where we discussed it, where Ted was, happened to be September 11th. And, you know, it's more to that story, but that's where I really got to know Joe and Jim in the Irish bar next door, but we won't talk about that. there's a site. Tom was one of the first people I talked to after we got the news, and we said, what can we do? What can we do? So he immediately put up a page on Facebook. It's called Memories of Thaddeus Setla, Ted Setla. And some of the stories that people have posted there about their experience with him are just mind-boggling. But one of them was really funny. And this guy, it's a guy he grew up with, but he never got to know Ted very well. But he says he had the best hair. It was like Fabio reached down from Olympus, laid a magical finger upon his head, and gifted him with the most epic California surfer meets Billy Ray Cyrus mullet. And that was funny. I'm sorry. I thought it was funny. But I think what a lot of people were saying is that we need to carry his vision and honor him by being good to each other, because that's pretty much what he was all about. Keep his memory alive by being good at what you do and being good to each other. So on another note, Joe, there's some stuff going on with COVID. We haven't talked about that for a while.
No, we haven't. And you're right. Things have been changing. I think for the better overall. You know, on the big scale, obviously some places in the world like India are experiencing an overwhelming pandemic that, you know, makes the stuff we saw here in the U.S. look kind of meager by comparison. That is absolutely devastating their healthcare system and resulting in lots of sick people and lots of deaths, unfortunately. But in the U.S., despite the presence of some variants, the UK variant and the South American variant, the South African variant, our numbers here are much better. Things have slowed dramatically. Certainly in my local region, we're way down from, you know, 200 plus new admissions to the hospital every day to 20 a day now. So things are much better. Vaccinations are moving along fairly well. And although the demand for vaccines have slowed, we continue to expand the number of people that are eligible now down to 12 to 14, you know, year old adolescents being able to get access to the vaccine. And I'm sure younger kids are coming in the very near future as well, with the hope that by school year next year, we'll have a fairly highly vaccinated group of, you know, children and adolescents that'll help protect our teachers and obviously allow kids to get back in school, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, looking forward to all of those things. The CDC just today relaxed its recommendations around people that have been fully vaccinated to say that masking and social distancing are much less of a deal now than they used to be. I don't know that we've quite figured out exactly what that looks like, but it is very clear that the vaccines are extremely good at reducing the severity of illness, the chance of death, and the chance of hospitalization. So, you know, it's not 100%, but if you've been fully vaccinated, you can rest quite comfortably knowing that you have very high levels of protection. And although you obviously can't avoid infection altogether, your chances of being really sick now are orders of magnitude less than they were before. So pretty great progress. And certainly if we look at that from the first responder world and the disaster medicine world that I spend a lot of my time in, that's a huge plus for the USAR system and all that kind of stuff, as we have pretty good. We're at 50 or 60% vaccination rates for our team, and that certainly makes it makes me feel a lot better to be able to go out the door and respond to upcoming hurricane season and all that kind of stuff, and know that the vast majority of folks on the team are vaccinated, and we can, you know, not worry, not spend as much time and energy in distancing and masking and all that other sort of stuff that we've had to do in the past year.
Yeah. Well, what about, I'm assuming, Joe, that maybe the elderly or people with don't have good immune systems probably should still use the masks because they're still more susceptible to the virus?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think using a mask is not a bad idea, period. You know, we certainly saw a very, very low impact flu season this past year. And I'm sure a lot of that had to do with the fact that we were undergoing precautions and activities that prevented us from getting coronavirus, but it also, you know, kept the flu at bay. So, you know, the procedures work no matter what. And I think for, you know, those who have other medical conditions or weakened immune systems, it makes just common sense to do what you can to protect yourself. So there's absolutely nothing wrong with continuing to socially distance and wear masks and all that sort of stuff. Whether you're worried about coronavirus or the common cold or influenza, it doesn't make any difference. They work, and it's a smart thing to do for folks that need to be extra careful.
So what about the cold season, Joe? Is there any data showing that it's been better for the same reason?
I don't off the top of my head know the answer to that, Sam. I think it has been less impactful than it has in the past, but I can't say I've seen any data to support that yet. I know the influenza season sort of never materialized this year. And, you know, the transmission is pretty similar to coronavirus, et cetera. So it certainly seems to me like it's reasonable to assume that, you know, the standard common cold was equally impacted by our measures.
Oh, good deal. What do you think, Bex?
Well, I've just been sort of approaching this from a bit of a psychological perspective, and that, you know, for the past year, the mask was, you know, the one thing that would keep us safe, you know, that, well, not the one thing, obviously, but the main thing, you know, really the visual reminder that we were still in this pandemic, we needed to protect ourselves, we needed to protect those around us, so we wore masks. 2 weeks ago, the CDC said, you still need to wear masks even if you're outside, if you're in a group, okay, even if you're vaccinated. And then 2 weeks later, they suddenly say no masks at all inside if you're vaccinated, which I get the science behind. I think I fully trust the vaccine. I'm happily vaccinated. But it's a bit of a whiplash, and I think it's going to be a bit difficult for people to get their head around suddenly not having to wear a mask. And so I think there may be people who still choose to when they're inside. There's going to be people who are like, yep, I'm done. I don't want to do it anymore. I'm vaccinated. I feel safe. And that's fine. I've seen a lot of judgment sort of both directions on Twitter today. And I just want to give space to all the different, you know, varying reactions and responses to this guidance, because it's been a difficult year. Everyone has had a different experience in this pandemic, and everyone's level of risk tolerance is different. And so how people move about their lives, you know, after this is going to vary widely.
Well said, Becky. I talked to an older woman today who refuses to take it off. She said, I just don't trust other people. So that's certainly her right to do that. Any further comment on that, Joe?
Well, I think she makes a really good point, right? And it seems that we've sort of gone from, you know, wear your mask and socially distance to suddenly, hey, it's all okay. But I think the devil's in the details there. You know, it's clear that it's much safer, and it's for folks who are fully vaccinated as opposed to those who are partially or not vaccinated. And so the dichotomy between those two populations is large now, right? And so the data appears to be saying that if you are fully vaccinated, that the levels of protection are extremely good and that your risk has dropped dramatically. Therefore, you can relax some of these precautionary measures. But for others who have not yet been fully vaccinated or are not vaccinated at all, that situation really hasn't changed. Their risk is still substantial, although their exposure may be less just because the virus is not moving through the population at the level that it was before. So, you know, in 3 months ago, every third person that you came across in public might have the virus. Now it might be one out of 10 or 20 that has the virus. So your chances of catching it are less. But your likelihood of catching it related to an exposure are the same as they were before if you've not been adequately vaccinated.
Ah, it's so it's an individual
frequently now.
Individual decision. What do you think, Jamie?
Well, I think this is a little bit of extending the carrot to people after a year of kind of trying to use the stick to get people to do what you need them to do. And I think that this is basically saying to people that are vaccine hesitant that, hey, look, all right, we've the data's in, we're able to make a decision that if you're vaccinated, you don't need a mask at all, indoors or out. And in these situations, so maybe it's a good idea to get that vaccine. And for some people, that's going to be enough, I think, to kick them over the edge and make that appointment, or go to the walk-in clinic and get it done. What are your thoughts on that, Joe? I mean, you've probably had conversations with patients about whether or not it's a good idea to get vaccinated.
Yeah, I think that's a great overview of it. You're right. Part of this is as we now have, you know, longer and longer term data from people that were vaccinated back, you know, in January, and seeing, you know, as we went from, you know, tens of thousands of people vaccinated to now hundreds of thousands or millions of people vaccinated, you know, the data just gets stronger and stronger and stronger of the protection level that people are afforded to have been vaccinated, and thus the desire for CDC and others to say, you know, we feel so good about that data that we feel it's you can begin to back away from the protective mechanisms. And obviously, I think from the bigger picture, it's like, and begin to go back to your lives, you know, get out and enjoy yourself and not have to wear a mask to go to the grocery store and et cetera, just to reward people who have been vaccinated and be able to say you can relax a lot and be able to sort of return to, you know, your normal lives that you had before all this started.
There's a lot to think about there. I'm just thinking about going to the grocery store with some people that refuse to be vaccinated, you know, even though I am, you know, so there's still a lot of questions out there. It'll be interesting. I love Becky's comments, though. It is kind of a, you know, a head slap event. We went from one thing to another pretty quickly, but we got to trust the CDC, too. But it's an individual decision, right, Jamie?
It is, and I think that you know, it comes down to education and learning and making sure that people have the right information. And you know, the CDC is appropriately a very conservative organization, which is why I think they've waited as long as they did to make that decision. You know, for us, we have educational changes all the time. I mean, in EMS, I think about all the different ways I've treated cardiac arrest patients over the years. As meds have changed, as doses have changed, as CPR procedures have changed, and we've had to adapt to make those changes when they come down every 5 years or whatever. So I think that it comes down to training and education, which is one of the things we focus on here all the time. It's one of the reasons we're proud to be associated with Paragon Medical Education Group. And, you know, Joe, you guys put together customized training with the most up-to-date information available at any given time. And I think that's one of the things people really appreciate from what you bring to the table.
Well, thanks, Jamie. And you're right. We're excited that the world is opening up again a little bit. We've got lots of things coming up on our calendar in the next 6 weeks, actually. I mean, we got four different events on the books now. And, you know, it's great to be able to get back out in the field and get to teaching again, because that is the passion that we have.
Where can folks reach you if they want to talk to you about some of the things you can bring to them and provide for their organization?
Well, we definitely want to talk to folks so that we can customize an educational experience that suits their needs. They can reach us at paragonmedicalgroup.com on the web or on Facebook and under the same name, or obviously through the Disaster Podcast.
Great. And Becky, where can folks find you?
They can find me over on Twitter at WX_Bex, LinkedIn at Becky DePodwin, and the Disaster Podcast Facebook page.
Sam, how about you?
All of the above under Sam Bradley or Sam Bradley 11, and certainly on our Facebook page, which is still growing, and we love them over there. What about you, Jamie?
Well, you can find me under the handle PodMedic in most social media locations, so please look me up and friend or follow me there. You can also, of course, find me, as Sam said, over at the Disaster Podcast Facebook group and in the over at disasterpodcast.com, where you'll find links to subscribe to the show on your mobile device using your favorite podcast app or even by email. So make sure you do that and don't miss an episode. Anyway, Sam, you know, we kind of covered a lot on this episode, and we certainly appreciate people indulging us and talking a little bit about TED at the beginning. Definitely important to keep up to date with what's going on with the COVID stuff.
Yes. And, again, we have a page for those folks that knew him, up on Facebook, just looking memories of Thaddeus Settler. So if you want to see what people are saying, go on over there. But, you know, it leaves me with the thought that, you know, be good to people and remember that things can change very quickly.